Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, it strikes me that blindness must be an enormous challenge. Just an enormous challenge. Watching the ground very carefully, or at least trying to feel one's way along, lest there be an unexpected curb or stone along the way. That's a problem, a challenge. I've had two cataracts removed over the years, and I was always stunned by the realization that there was so much color out there that I hadn't been able to see. So someone who is dealing with blindness lives with the realization that there are other things beyond one's experience that one has hardly any knowledge of. Whenever I'm alone in an elevator, and I confess if someone saw me, I probably would feel foolish, but when I'm alone in an elevator, I often shut my eyes and feel the braille on the numbers of the elevator floors and marvel at what it must be like to be able to read those little bumps and designs and decide what floor it is. That's just a remarkable thing. But it's yet again another indication of the kind of challenges that people have if they live with blindness. I recall, this is a good many years ago, but I recall being in a Palm Sunday procession from St. Gaul's, then existing St. Gaul's Church, to St. Elizabeth's, then existing St. Elizabeth's. And it was a early spring Palm Sunday, and it was a freezing rain, but we were determined we were going to march in procession. And we had asked someone who was, in fact, blind to read the opening portion of the gospel. And I'm standing there in the rain and listening to this gospel, and it was absolutely beautiful. Well, the person reading it, Wally, was, in fact, blind. And so afterwards, I said, Wally, where did you get that translation? It's so beautiful. Oh, he said, it was so cold, my fingers were numb. I couldn't feel the bumps in the braille, so I kind of made it up as I went along. It was marvelous, I had to say. Well, all of that comes to mind, as you might guess, because of this superb gospel passage. And I want to unpack it a little bit, because there's a richness of detail that we might miss if we just heard it or pass through it quickly, because there's some wonderful things. The cure of Bartimaeus. First of all, he was begging from passers-by, and then suddenly when he heard that Jesus was passing by, he upped the ante, begging then from Jesus, but calling him Son of David, that suddenly changes the object of the plea, because it acknowledges that there was a messianic tone here. So we've moved to an upper level of spiritual reality and the beginning of a hope for something at the end of time, as people look forward for a king who might give them independence from the house of David, out of the house of David. So that element of begging that runs through and changes in the process. Folks told Bartimaeus to be quiet, but he called out. He called out, then he called out louder, then they told him to be quiet, and Jesus then heard him and called him, and they said, he's calling you. So Bartimaeus he's blind. And everything that happens is calling back and forth. It's sound that counters that blindness and emphasizes what he can do and what he can do very well. He threw aside the cloak. That's not simply something that he wrapped over his shoulders in order to keep warm, but rather that was spread out on the ground. That's his source of income. That's where people tossed some kind of alms onto the ground. He pushed it aside. So it's not just convenience for rising, but there's an element of putting aside dependence in one and willingness to take the risk of being dependent on someone else. It's a beautiful little image lost in the story if we don't pay attention. And when he did see, He followed Jesus on the way. On the way. Not just the geographical route from Jericho up to Jerusalem, and the very next passage talks about the solemn triumphant entry into the temple, into Jerusalem, and then eventually into the temple. That little part of it, but on the way. Because the way was the early name for Christianity. So having seen, received his sight, then he follows Jesus on the way. It's a bigger, bigger response than one might imagine, just hearing the words. So once again, as in so many other healing stories in the gospel, blindness is not simply physical. Blindness is also spiritual. And in this case, it's blindness to anything that could prevent a person from being a loyal follower of Jesus on the way. So there are many kinds of blindness. There is physical blindness. And we all know some of the diseases that can come into a person's life and cause great difficulty. Glaucoma, and detached retinas, and macular degeneration, and who knows what other things. So blindness is physical. That's very true. And in the Near East, without the customary practice of putting some kind of mercury into the eyes of newly born, there are just an awful lot of people walking the streets with clear vision problems. Very clear. I remember being in Cairo, and it seemed like everybody on the street had some kind of eye problem of one kind or another. So it is physical. But it's also intellectual. Blindness, intellectual. When someone is so committed to an explanation of one thing or another that the contrary evidence is ignored or denied, I suppose flat earth people would come to mind as an example. I lift it up because there's hardly any of those around. I can't offend anyone. But then how about the anti-evolutionists who just feel so strongly about a certain explanation? As long as God is in the picture, well, why not? Why not? John Paul II said, this is possible, it makes sense, it's scientific evidence and from every direction. So there's such a thing as intellectual blindness. And we need to be careful about it, each single one of us, myself included. And then there's emotional blindness. And I thought a few years ago, when there was someone who was so entangled in a particular scam. And that's really what it was. It was a scam. If you give me money, I have a bequest that's coming to me, and I will share this with you. Just call this number. Person called the number and said, is this the post office in Tennessee? Yes, it is. There's such a bequest. Well, the person was so entangled in this emotionally that he couldn't, and had given so much money and had asked so many other people to give money to this scam that he couldn't imagine that this could not be true. We had to get the individual out of town, the district attorney and myself, get him out of town so that the people could be arrested. We all have our own examples, I'm sure, of that kind of emotional blindness. And then spiritual blindness. The church, only as militant, fighting evil. And therefore, letters for confirmation, someone saying, I want to be a soldier of Christ. Well, I grew up with that too. But that's not the only thing that the church is. Fighting evil where evil is, but also leaven in society and mustard seed and who knows what else. Or the notion of God as only judge and not physician and not brother and companion and all of those other wonderful titles that are given to Jesus as part of our Christology. So there are many kinds of blindness. And this gospel passage invites us to think about our own, to look in the mirror and say, we all have those little black floaters that are in our sight, especially of my vintage, and our little floaters that are there that block off some little element of the world around us. Christ wants to heal anything and everything which inhibits our following him on the way. He wants to heal everything. And every kind of blindness gets in the way of following him on the way. Some years ago, more than I want to recall, now that I think about it, some years ago I was asked to give a talk to parents of First Communion children. I was over at St. Veronica's on the south side. And I was talking away about how they could be part of this preparation. And I made just a casual reference. I remember at the time a casual reference to, well, you got to help them into gospel values. It's an easy phrase that comes. One of the parents says, well, those gospel values, what are they? And all of a sudden I realized it was a phrase I took so for granted that I was caught off guard. And I looked at my watch and I said, well, now that's a big topic, so we'll talk about that next time. And of course, it was true. We needed more time. But the other part of it was I needed to think through that myself, because those gospel values are right at the heart of the way. And anything that gets in the way of our being on the way is a blindness. So gospel values, a personal relationship with God. A personal relationship with God as Father in the sense of source of our lives and a caring parent. Gospel value, personal relationship. The need for forgiveness and the obligation to share forgiveness with others. Gospel value. The obligation, the opportunity to work for justice. And not only justice in that narrow sense of repaying debts, but justice in the biblical sense of entering into right relationship with the whole world and helping the whole world be in right relationship to each other. That's a gospel value. And the cross, that one thing that we'd like to remove if we could from our life, but we can't. And so learning how to do that. But we can't do it alone. We need others. And so there's the community that's part of a gospel value. And then victory, ultimate victory. That's the gospel. Anything that gets in the way of our following on the way is a kind of blindness which Christ wants to heal. So we all say with Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, in response to the question, what do you want? What can I do for you? By the way, that's the same thing that Jesus asked last week when the two disciples said, we want to sit at your right hand in the kingdom. The same thing. What can I do for you? What do you want me to do? We all say, I want to see. I want to see. And the word in the text is more than just see. It's anablepso. It means I want to look up. I want to look up. Not just be so constrained to looking down at what's close here at hand so that I don't stumble. But I want to look up. I want to see the big picture. And we all know the story about the blind man with the elephant. And they asked, what is this? If you're holding the tail, you say, I think it's a rope. If you're holding the trunk on the other end, you say, well, I think it's a snake. If you're holding the legs, you think I'm a tree. Because all of us, we don't have the big picture. And to the degree that we don't have the big picture that Christ provides, we're blind. God promises to heal us. But to heal us in God's way. And that means that we have to learn sometimes in the process to be dependent upon someone else. And that's a very important lesson in life. And then to each one of us, Christ says, go your way. You have a bigger picture. Your faith has saved you. The gospel of the Lord.